You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It is December 10th, 2020. By the time you hear this, some of my predictions may be on their way to coming true. So first, last night, I was introduced to the new drug that will probably be the end of podcasts. It's called Clubhouse. Oh my God, it's a new social networking thing. I'm addicted. I was up till 2 or 3 in the morning just listening to conversations and bouncing from room to room. So that's my first prediction. My next prediction is that my next guest is the future mayor of Indianapolis. So join me in welcoming Ifeanyi Chukwu Osili, or as he is known to his constituents as the president of the City Council of Indianapolis, VOP Osili, for Voice of the People. Hello, VOP.
Tanya, how are you doing?
I'm good. How dare you think I wouldn't remember your name?
It's got so many letters in it, sometimes I can't remember it.
So, you know, I told you before you came in, we have to talk politics because you're at the center of it. You can give us some Nigerian politics, you can give us some Indiana politics, and then you can give us some VOP politics. Tell us, what is going on in the world?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll start with Indianapolis. This year has been an amazing one for reawakening. There's no two ways about it. Last year, though, even before this started, you know, I determined with our mayor that we were going to change the way that we handled equity, that we were going to address it, and let's just start talking about it. Let's normalize that discussion. So we were 6 months ahead of the reawakening when it happened, already putting stuff into place. You know, Indianapolis is 200 years old. For the first time in our history, every single budget, every single department head, every agency that came to us, because we have to approve all funding, right, on the city council. We approve all funding. We got, you know, a billion something, you know, a annual budget. Every single agency had to present its own equity plan. One, as a baseline, you know, who do you have? How are you hired? What are the salaries, et cetera? And how are you spending your money to basically embed equity into how we are using our taxpayer dollars? So now we have a baseline this year that we can then compare against next year. What improvements are we making to ensure that we have measurable outcomes, measurable differences in achieving equity and equitable outcomes with the uses of our dollars? And then, of course, we have public safety. And we have talked about it not as obviously not defund the police, because we're not even going down that road. But we're not even going down that road.
Well, but wait a minute. But defund the police just means take some of the money away from them and put it into other services.
Well, how about first of all, we determine what are the needs of public safety, right? Because, you know, I've got an aged mother, as you very well know. She's in her 90s, right? There is a large contingent of folk who still need to know that when they pick up the phone, the police are there. So let's determine what are the essentials that they need to perform their duties, right? And then let's see what other funding we need to deal with issues of mental health and trauma and so on. So when I go down this road, as I'm about to go down this road with you, we look at it as putting sort of public back in public safety. What we've done here in Indianapolis, and we were told it was like the first, but it may not be. The body that determines police policy has always been determined by a small group of those already in law enforcement, with no oversight, no engagement, nothing from the general public. We have now created something called the General Orders Board, where we have a majority of civilians who will help to determine police policy. So that the policies that we see and that we question and we say, well, why is that allowable? We at least now will have an open door so that we determine how we even got there. And then accountability for those results. That to me is enormous. Now, it came at a political cost. There are a lot of folks who are probably not as excited about that as I am and most of our civilians out here are. But having the voice of the people engaged in police policy determination and creation
I think. And do you mean Voice of the People, Vop?
Loves you, baby. Loves you. No, no, but. But yeah, but no. But we created that this year just so that we start to have better police community relations. How do we build up a trust that is not there? And I know that you're the daughter of a police officer, and I know where you stand on a lot. So, you know, you're almost like our test case, you know what I'm saying? Like the one that we've got to be able to say, Tanya, if we did X, Y, Z, would this help to reestablish a baseline of trust so that you have a voice in how we're policed? I mean, the whole idea about putting the public back in public safety is the bottom line. And we have so much distrust in our communities across this country. And we got a lot of distrust here in Indianapolis. And we got to do better about that. We have to, we coexist. And we can do it ugly, or we can do it pretty. Or we can just, but we got to do it. And let's move away from ugly. Let's see if we can get along in a way that says, you've got your role. Here's our expectation of you. And then those things that you have no business doing, you stop doing. We're not going to ask you to be a marriage counselor. You know, we're not going to ask you to get the cat out of the tree. You deal with public safety. We'll find the funds to deal with those other elements. So when we talk about defund the police, it is more a matter of what are those elements that you all are doing that you shouldn't be doing. Now, you've been doing them because you were the default. But let's work on those other things and get that baseline built up. Get that foundation built up.
Now, you're in a state where that's going to be hard, okay? I mean, I was talking with some people from the Franklin Foundation, and they were telling me how in 2016, when they actually, it wasn't the Franklin Foundation at that time, because the Franklin Foundation is new. These people who started this new organization said that in 2016, Pence, and what was Pence, your governor then?
Pence was our governor in 2016, correct.
He sent the sheriffs to a voter registration office. They lined up everybody up against the wall. They took all their machines. They went to the person who was running that office and said, you're going to tell us what irregularities are going on here, or we are going to go to your house and find the drugs. And so they shut that voter registration office down, and 10,000 people did not get even registered to vote. You know, what are you going to do about stuff like that? That's not police.
That's not police. It's about accountability. And then this reawakening, normalizing the discussion about bias and an entitlement.
But you're in a city, and the rest of your state is not going to support your city. I mean, Indiana is supporting Texas going to the Supreme Court.
I know that. I know that. In fact, we were the first state to declare for Trump this year. I mean, literally, 6:09 p.m., we were the first state. They didn't even bother. You don't even have to count the votes here. We understand this is how we roll. But that's, you know, that's all well and good. But there is a governor right now who does get it. There's a governor, you know, right now, and a state house, too, that has... And understanding we're not going to continue to do the stuff that we used to do, because we can't get away with the stuff that we used to get away with without being called out.
But calling out is not enough, really.
It's called accountability, and we got to do it. There's no other way around it. We don't have, you know, we're not going to have a coup in the state of Indiana, right?
We haven't one in the United States right now.
Yeah, well, we don't roll like that here in Indiana. So we're this big blue island in the sea of red. And it does take an ability to sit with folks and talk through it in a reasonable manner.
Well, Limbaugh was calling for you all to secede.
Okay, so so Limbaugh doesn't really govern kind of, you know, Indiana, and we do have a moderate as a governor now. In the days of Pence, I could not have said that. We have a moderate in state house, and we've got a pretty moderate head of you know, the Senate and Speaker of the House, folks who will listen and take action. So while this iron is still hot, it's why we're doing these things. Now we also don't have I'll tell you, we don't have home rule, which means that today. Or January 1st, when they take office, they could say, Indianapolis, you no longer even have a city council. we're running here. We're running all your stuff. Oh, yeah. We used to have 29 city councilors, right? And then when we started having a majority of the council, you know, we had four at-large members. They were all Democrats. And our numbers were pretty great. Well, just one day they woke up and said, we're getting rid of, you know, your at-larges. You really don't need them, right? So it was just before an election. And when they took away those four, we would have, had all the seats stayed as they were, we would have lost our majority as a Democrat, as Democrats. But we worked really hard and we ended up with majority that year. Now, our city is pretty progressive. Right now, we have 25 city councilors, 20 of whom are Democrats. Now, I don't know how city is going to feel about that. Like, what happened, right? Indianapolis used to be red. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is a Democratic city and progress has happened. And it's now, you know, just really a Democratic city.
But cities in general tend to be Democratic, like Chicago in Illinois, which is pretty red. Yeah, and New York.
Illinois is blue. Don't even try. Illinois
well,
blue.
But because so many people live in Chicago, but the rest of the state does not vote blue.
So that's the case here. So that's why. We don't have the power even to have a coup if there was such a thing as a state coup, right? So what it does take is folks being rational and having those discussions about how do we progress forward. You know, do not take the powers away from the city of Indianapolis, which is your capital, which is in fact where the capital sits. The capital sits in my own district, downtown. You know, I represent much of downtown. It requires us to have those discussions about how we move forward in a way that is equitable. And if you don't like equity, please determine.
So now you got to define equity. You keep using this word, so I want to know what it means to you.
It means that there are the same opportunities and the same opportunities for outcomes for every single citizen and resident of the state of Indiana.
Okay. I really want to play with this with you because, you know, once I was talking with Michael Eric Dyson and we were on a panel and someone from the audience who happened to be Caucasian said, you know, what can we do? How can we help? And Michael said, you know, I just want an average Black person to have the same opportunities as mediocre white people. Now, how can we switch the equity of that? Because that's really about people giving jobs to friends or to children of friends or to family members. I mean, this whole thing of internships, you can't be an intern and work for free unless you're already from a wealthy family that's going to support you while you're working for free. And that's the pipeline to being the boss.
How do you
put equity there?
You put equity there by accountability and by making all of your decisions as public as possible. It is incredibly hard. But Tanya, it is incredibly hard to defend bigotry. It is incredibly hard in a room full of somewhat reasonable people. Now, when you get your extremes, don't even open your mouth. There's no point, right?
But that's who you're going to have. I'm going to defend bigotry right now. Well, there just aren't enough Black people who know how to do what we do here at this company. And we don't have time to train them.
Then prove it. It's a step-by-step process. Last year, we did our equity study, basically, for the city of Indianapolis, which was how do we procure in an equitable manner? First of all, who are we procuring from for all of our city contracts? And let's look at the capacity that we have in the city of Indianapolis, both for minority businesses and women businesses and veteran-owned businesses and disabled-owned businesses. What capacity do we have? And then who are we actually contracting with? If you don't have the data to back it up, it's my opinion against yours. But if you see that data, how do you, you know, you can, of course, argue and say, well, I like it the way it is. And that's the way it is. Right. You can do that. I mean, that's up to you. But in a room full of like maybe four reasonable people out of 10, it's going to be hard to sway and stand firm on that. It just doesn't work. Now, we're not in an extreme red state. We are in a red state. So we're in a moderate red state. And I thank God for that. If I'm going to be in any red state, let it at least be a moderate red state where there are people right now, at least in leadership, who have an ability to hear, to see data, to be challenged on that data. And then we sit back and watch and say, now, what are you going to do with it? Here is the direction that we're taking. Are you going to fight us on this? Are you going to work with us on this so that we fulfill what we have said we're here to fulfill? And that is an opportunity I would say an equal opportunity, which is very difficult to outline, for outcomes. What is my outcome going to look like? Do I have the same ability? So even right now, just yesterday, we were talking about internships and the fact that we have to put money now into internships. We now have changing the way that we are recruiting for city internships so that it's not just restricted to the state of Indiana. And that's the way we've done it. Because we are now looking for HBCUs and also, you know, our predominantly sort of, you know, Latinx higher educational institutions, so that we can start to recruit from them as well. So that our offices, the administration, the council, the agencies, the departments have a pipeline of people of color that reflect really the body of Indianapolis. Indianapolis has 29% Black people, right? I think it's 8%, you know, Latinx people. We are fast approaching a majority of people of color in the city of Indianapolis. You know, you think about Indianapolis, you think it's out in the prairies, and you know, everybody's got to be just, sure, it's just maybe 5% of Black people. We have an enormous number here. Our government and therefore our institutions need to reflect that. And that's a discussion we started having last year. In fact, we engaged in an organization called Government Alliance on Race and Equity. They've been doing this across the country, working within local governments to help them map out a course so that they work towards achieving equity and equitable outcomes for all of the residents. And,
you just being so politician, I got to get you off this politician thing here. So we're going to Nigeria. We're going to Nigeria then. That'll get you off this politician thing. So as a Nigerian national, please help me understand these massacres that are going on.
See. Now, don't forget now, before you mess me up in my American home, I am an American citizen born of an American mother.
I know this all true, but you also have some roots on the continent.
It's true.
Aren't you a king or something? A prince?
You know what I'm saying? What we're seeing what the rest of the world is seeing is what Nigeria, I think, is known for a long time. And that is that there is not accountability in military force and military use. There's not accountability in policing. And because of the social media, now everyone knows the level of force and violence that can be meted out on protesters. And that's something that is difficult for a country like Nigeria to be seen in that light now. This has been a year of awakening globally.
But Nigeria
SARS happened. And they beat them.
You're an oil-rich nation, so yes. This is a wealthy nation, and we are seeing police just shooting peaceful protesters. Like, how does that stop?
Yes.
I mean, because I'm like, this might be the foreshadowing of America.
It stops because others now see it, and there's no way to deny it. Just like, who would have thought that the murder of George up in Minneapolis would have turned this world upside down? But it's because we saw it, and we saw the cool, callous hatred and ugliness of it for 8.5 minutes. Those things become almost impossible to ignore. I mean, how else can you explain this? Now there is this awakening of, you mean this stuff's going on?
I'm not seeing it. I'm honestly not seeing it.
Right now, it is there. Nigeria, for the president of Nigeria to finally come out and say, we probably used too much force. Unheard of. You know, my father was in government over there. You can be sure that the military governors, and the military president would never have owned up to a thing. They could have beaten someone on his front step, shot them, you know, massacred, decapitated, and he'd have been looking at the camera like Mr. Chauvin, like Officer Chauvin. Like, who you gonna believe, me? Or your lion eyes. But this, you can't get away from. And all the young folks who post about this and the disgrace that comes with this. Nigeria is an oil-rich nation, which unfortunately did not invest its money wisely. It invested its money strictly in oil. It never diversified. And now with oil being, you know,
We're trying to get to our green to get what? Yeah, we're trying to go green.
It's just not happening. So you know, if you think about a country like UAE, where they invested their money, like in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, Nigeria could have been like that. But we also have some other challenges of transparency in the use of those funds, You know what I'm saying? Transparency of the use of those funds with people who had the ability to move those funds into places that maybe work for the public good.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So you have some personal connections between two very different styles of government.
Yes.
The American so-called democracy. Is Nigeria also democracy? Mm-hmm. Are both democracies a democratic republic? Mm-hmm. Now it seems like you're implying that there's a lot of that the corruption is more than there is in America, but the corruption here is pretty extreme.
It is, and we saw it during the Trump administration, right? But the difference is the volume. So here in America, it would have been tough for Donald Trump to have put $2 to $3 billion from the central bank, the Federal Reserve, into his own pocket. It wasn't as difficult in Nigeria for people. It didn't quite have as many checks and balances to make that virtually impossible. So the kind of corruption we see is on the sort of thousands and tens of thousands. And, you know, people get prosecuted for having stolen $50,000. When Spiro Agnew in 1973, I think, had to resign, I think there was some issue with him and funding. It might have been like $14,000 or something. I don't remember what it was. I remember fathers of friends of mine laughing that the vice president of the United States has to step down for $14,000. Our drivers collect more than that for having taken us to collect more money than that. So it's the volume of how much is not transparently lost in the paperwork. I mean, that's the difference. So it happens here in America, but it was a little bit more blatant, a lot more blatant then during that time. I can't say what it is now, but it was pretty blatant in its time.
Hmm. So is mayor, what is that the aspiration, or is it governor, or is it president?
Right now, to be frank with you, it is to be the very best council president and the best counselor that I can be. And then what comes next?
Spoken like a true politician.
And from the heart, I mean it. And from the heart. And from the heart.
Spoken like a true politician right there.
I'm just telling you right now. I'm telling you from the heart. That's it. That's it. That's
it. Well, then let's talk about your film debut.
Oh!
How are your constituents going to feel about your film debut the horror film Red Pill?
I showed that to someone and they're like, yeah, is that you with a noose around your neck? Are you crazy? That could be the end of you. What are you doing? Not in 2020. Oh, no. Oh, no. I want to actually say, can you call Tanya and ask if she could use like maybe another still? Not with you. With a noose. Oh, that was a blast, though. I tell you, I love that. Oh, my God. My God. I didn't even know that I could, like, scream. You know what I'm saying? Or emote like that. But it came naturally. I'm like, damn, I got this.
You ready to be in movie number two, huh?
Oh, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? This one with a speaking role. Oh, no, it was fantastic. I loved it. Well, thank you for that opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, how's that coming?
We're very close to the end of post. All the VFX is now, we're at the, you know, VFX and sound and color, and hopefully it'll be out by the new year. And the thing is, you know, we had hoped we'd have it out by election, but it's going to be as relevant after election, so relevant after because, inauguration.
Thank you.
It's still the same world.
And still as poignant. I mean, still incredibly poignant, especially whatever happens on January 20th, you know, up to January.
We got to get through December 14th.
Okay, good point. My bad. Absolutely my bad. My bad. Who would have thought this would happen in America? This is a third world kind of action.
I did. I wrote it in my movie. I knew it was going to happen. I saw this. That's why my movie says it. All this is in the movie.
I know, but it was a movie, right? It was science fiction or it was fiction. Who would have thought America would be in a position like this? We've always
I thought America would be in this prediction. Because this, when you let someone like that have the keys to the kingdom, you can't take them back.
Tell me about it. Wow. I just never would have thought it. It has changed the perception, I think, of America. It's shown that America is vulnerable. It's vulnerable to the same kinds of bad actions that you see in third world countries. That we have allowed this and tolerated this.
We've been doing this bad action since America began. I mean, I feel like we're not vulnerable in the sense that geographically, who's going to come for us?
Yeah, well, you don't even have to deal with that when we have the, you know, ballistic missiles that can go, you know, twice around the world. But the thought that America would fall to this level where we have someone who is talking about rocking the foundations of our institutions, our voting and our electoral system. Who would have thought that we could be prey to that in America?
I would, because we've been prey to it.
I just
we have been prey to it. The Republicans have been trying to keep Black people from voting forever. They were lynching us for voting. They were planting, you know, for me, this is not new.
It's true. You know, you're right. We have been at it. It's just been another form of it. And never so blatant that the rest of the world can say, like, are you serious? This time of reawakening, I know that you don't agree that we are in a reawakening, but at least from my vantage point here in local government, I do see it. We are in a new place.
White people are willing to give up some power over there in Indianapolis. They're like, oh, here, you have some wealth. I've had so much wealth. I have more wealth than I could ever use in my lifetime. Here, you have some. Is that happening in Indianapolis?
It's not a giveaway. It is, and I'm not going to say it's a takeaway. But for example, we have an office here. It's called the Office of Minority and Women Business Development. And its job basically has been to look at how we procure. It's never had any tooth to it. You know, we make all these commitments when we sign the documents that we're going to perform a city service. But if you did not do your due diligence to ensure that you met our goals, because of course we can't call them, they're not quotas, they're goals. There was no punishment. So this year we changed that. And it shocked a lot of folks, because now that Office of Minority Women Business Development can step in and cut your contract. It can bar you from ever doing work with the city of Indianapolis again. So folks were like, were you serious? Did you really mean all that stuff that was on the paper? Are we really supposed to make a good faith effort? Now, we had some folks who did an amazing job, and we had others. And I used to, you know, I'm an architect. You know, I worked for many, many years as an architect, both here and in UAE. We had folks who worked with us like that. We would go in with them. We never heard from them once the contract came about. And I realized, you know what? That is wrong. I know what it feels like. Office is going to have the power to cut you. If you don't behave, we got somebody else standing right behind you who will. And it's that kind of stuff. So folks may not want to necessarily give it up, but we will help them give it up. How about that?
You know, this sounds like, you know, you make enemies when you say you're going to change things. So how do you build your coalition to move up?
It's tough. It is getting folks who have a like mind, who will at least agree, is something fair or not fair? Can we come to that first, you know, that first junction? If we can get past that, then we have another junction that we come to, and then another and another. But we have to have a baseline. Is this right? Can you stand behind this and defend these actions for these generations? Tell me why.
Hi, I'm Tanya Pinkins, and that was part one of my conversation with Indianapolis City Council President Vop Osili. Come back for part two.
You was kind. You was smart. You is important. You is dead. Tanya Pinkin's horror film, Red Pill, brings African-American perspective to progressive movement.
We are a majority in this country, and we're going to win the election.
Do you know what the red pill is? A red pill is someone who infiltrates a group and then destroys them from the inside. This place is spooky.
Some people like to live dangerously.
Cass, why are you so jumpy tonight?
You know what, guys? I'm going to go back tomorrow.
Did you hear about the creature woman that attacked a father and son hunting down here?
I don't see the case. This place creeps me out.
I think we should call the sheriff's office.
Only people missing or dead are brown people.
They're after all of us.
What do we do, Amelia?
We die. But we take some of them with us.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.